the Spot Track Podcast, talking sports contracts, the salary cap, and business of sports.
Welcome to a special edition of the Spot Track Podcast. My name is Mike Giannetti. It is Friday, April 26th. The first round of the NFL draft is in the books, and it is not without drama. That's why we're here. All 32 contracts are on the draft tracker in terms of projected 4 years. Average salary, signing bonuses. I tweeted every single one of those out last night, kind of exhaustingly. Hopefully you could bear with me with that. Now we do a little bit of debugging, debriefing. And cousin Dan's gonna join me in just a few minutes to talk, of course, about some of the more notable moves, certainly what the Falcons have done, the Bills' constant trade back process, and where they sit now heading into the second round tonight. And just some positional talk, because it was obviously heavy offense. We kind of knew that. I'm not sure we knew it to this degree, but that's sort of the way it went, and we're going to have to live with it. It has nothing to do with teams not valuing defense. It's just kind of the cycle of where this draft was and where these prospects hit, and certainly where the game is going as well, right? The combination of all three things led to 14 straight offensive picks before the Colts took a defensive edge rusher off of the board at the 15th pick. Couple of nice trades. I wouldn't say anybody overpaid this year. And I talked to Scott, who runs that portion of the draft for us every single year and has done so now for the past 15 years. Everything kind of seems status quo. Did Buffalo get enough from Kansas City late for a rival team to jump ahead of them for what could be a game-changing piece? We'll let Dan decide that. But look, six quarterbacks and 12 picks. I don't even know how you start any other place. Certainly with the teams who took those quarterbacks, I'd say for the most part, five of those teams were, we get it. We saw it coming. And then of course, the Falcons jumped in there at 8 with Michael Penix Jr. We'll see what Cousin Dan has to say about this and plenty more coming up next. All right, Dan, I take it you didn't make it through 32 picks last night. I know you got a young child. I know how it works. You'll get yourself back into that gear soon in a couple of years. But have you had a chance to at least digest what happened last night from really 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock when I wouldn't say it was one, you know, the most chaotic first round we've had, but there are certainly some stunners in there.
Yeah, I mean, part of, you're absolutely right, I didn't make it, but part of my thinking there was, being a Bills fan, I was not with the narrative that they were about to trade up. I did think they were going to trade back, so all of these Bills fans feeling victimized that they stayed up late for no pick, I was ahead of the game on that. Not really intentionally, though. I fell asleep. So regardless, though, you know, some surprises there.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to the big surprise. Let's at least take a few angles with this Michael Penix Jr. pick, because I've taken some time now. I've thrown a couple of takes up on Twitter just because the contract says a couple of things, right? And Kirk Cousins says, first of all, I love how one of the big storylines is, was Kirk Cousins reached out to, right? As if we're trying to equate this to Aaron Rodgers and Jordan Love. Kirk Cousins has been there for a minute and a half. Has he even stepped into the Falcons facility yet? You know what I mean? Like they don't owe him a, this is what we're planning to do conversation. Now, it's good they kept him in the loop 5 minutes before they took the pick, but I think it's funny that we're handling this situation because of the it's all because of the contract, right? Kirk Cousins has done nothing for the Falcons organization yet, except he's guaranteed $100 million. So there's an obligation to say, hey, this is what we're doing. Here's how I want to start this conversation. The quote that's bugging me from the Falcons front office is, if Michael Penix Jr. has to sit for 4 to 5 years, we've done something right. That was said last night by the Falcons. Now, you could have said 1,500 other things, and I would have bought them, because I get it. The other thing that was said, which I think is the right sentiment, is we don't plan on being this high in the draft for the next 5 years. They said that. Stop right there. Put a period, put an exclamation point on it, and stop talking. Because after that, they then said, if Michael Penix Jr. has to sit for 4 years, the heck are we doing here, right? I just don't know why they needed to add that part to the conversation. And look, if Penix Jr. is the backup quarterback for the next 4 years, it's $5.7 million a year. It's $23 million of their life, right? These are billionaires. It's not the worst contractual situation to have Cousins for 4 years and Penix for 4 years. I just have a problem with this number eight pick. That's all. So talk me off this cliff, or you know, align with me here. Where do you sit with the Falcons doing what they've done, which is they didn't improve themselves, right? That's the problem I'm having. So where do you stand with this, Dan?
Yeah, I'm glad you kind of started with that point, because I can't believe they're not out front saying this is a move. We think we have a roster that we can create sustained success over multiple years beyond our expected duration with Kirk Cousins. I mean, I know they're not going to say Kirk Cousins' time is limited here, we're looking towards the future, but that is kind of the point in all of this, is if they are good over the next few years and then Kirk Cousins departs and they are looking at a mm-hmm. talented roster and saying, how are we going to, what's the solution at quarterback? Like, I don't really have an issue with them doing it from that standpoint, but it's a little bit puzzling that they're not really putting that spin on it, if you will, while they're kind of getting dragged through the mud. Right. Sort of understandably. Now what I stumble on is, it sounds like multiple teams were trying to get up to that pick, or at least into the top 10 for the same player. So if they simultaneously didn't get better with that pick and did not take a big package, they're mm-hmm. like, they have a young, talented roster, but there are many holes there, right? And taking a quarterback did not address the 2024 roster, as you tweeted. So I keep stumbling on it from that standpoint. And it, the one good thing is what you laid out previously, is that like, this is a look towards the future beyond Kirk Cousins, but that doesn't appease anyone for 2024. Right. So if this roster does not win in the next 2 years, right? Like there's a famous quote from Brandon Bean when they traded up for Josh Allen, something along the lines of, if this doesn't work, I won't be here anyway.
That's right.
If it does work, who cares about what we paid to get there, right? Now, Terry Fontenot may not be there if they don't win over the next 2 years. So the Michael Penix thing might not even matter, or he's going to get thrown into trial by fire after a year and a half if things aren't working out in 2025 anyway, right? So there's a couple avenues here. I just can't get over kind of not addressing the roster when – this wasn't them just sitting there at pick 16 and there's really not a good player here. We think there's really good value here. Like, if that was a coveted pick and they used it on a quarterback, which they don't need, and they did not get better in 2024, I do have a little bit of an issue with that. Right. So
to me, the issue compounds with who was selected next, which is Romo Dunze, right?
Right.
Drake London is entering year three, which means he probably needs a contract next March. I know he hasn't been the pick that they wanted him to be. It's perfectly within reason to think that Kirk Cousins is going to elevate Drake London into a top-tier wide receiver over the course of the next 6 months. I don't think that's inconceivable by any means, which means you're going to have to pay him, which means you're going to want to start the track over on your weapons. And oh, by the way, Kyle Pitts, if he has a breakout, going to need to get paid as well. Which means your value for your receivers are basically out the door. You could have easily taken arguably the second best available weapon in this draft at number eight, and nobody would have blinked an eye, because it made perfect roster construction sense. There's talk about Kirk Cousins' Achilles issue and how maybe this is just insurance. You don't take insurance for a $100 million player number eight overall. You just don't do that. Okay, you take insurance by signing Carson Wentz to a $1 million contract. That's what you do. That's just the going rate right now for this kind of situation. I've also heard maybe Cousins is just a one and done. In fact, Kirk Cousins' agent has been tweeting to this effect, right? That people are blowing him up. Like, does this mean Kirk isn't long for this roster? I'll push back from a financial standpoint and tell you that Kirk Cousins is going to make $62.5 million this year. Are you telling me the plan for Atlanta is to pay him $62.5 million and then try to find a trade partner for a 37-year-old, possibly 80% healthy Kirk Cousins? No, that is ridiculous business. That's ridiculous business. So I think this is kind of where you're at, which is they just decided he was too good to pass up. And I don't agree with that. To me, that's not a winning formula. This is a front office that is not used to being in contention. And I believe they are. And I believe they would have been in better contention with an edge rusher or the best cornerback in the draft. And I think they effed that up. And your point is so valid. If the GMs believe that they're fighting for their jobs here, why would you make this pick? Why would you make this pick? You're never going to be here for Michael Penix Jr. Be selfish and pick somebody that can help you keep your job right now. Every other GM in the league is doing this. No other GM in the league is building for the future. They're building for right now, including the best, including Brett Veach, including Howie Roseman. Right. They don't give a rat's behind about 3 years. They never have. They never will. We talk about it from a salary cap perspective, push it down the line, right? The draft is now in that mode too. Nobody's planning for the future, especially with the first round, especially with the number 8 pick. I think it's a torpedo move. I really do think Terry Fontenot can lose his job in 8 months because of this pick. And I hate saying that because I'm in the camp of everybody should have as many quarterbacks as humanly possible, but not via this route.
Yeah, totally. I this is like the ultimate cart before the horse thing, in my opinion. Like that, yeah. And we're sort of crapping on our earlier point. All we were trying to do before is highlight why they would have done this, like laying out the future. But it doesn't really align for me too when like there's been veteran quarterbacks available on the market for cheap almost, you know, every offseason for the last half dozen years, right? So I don't really think you needed to put that plan in place. Like the Jordan Love thing is a little is different. Like the situation is slightly different in the fact that he was like 25th or 26th overall, I think, right? Yes. This isn't a top 10 pick. And that just happened to work out for them, right? Like that could have easily went the other way where they spent that first round pick instead of adding a wide receiver for Aaron Rodgers, and then Aaron Rodgers leaves. Jordan Love is actually not good, and then they're kind of starting from nowhere, right? So that just
but also, Dan, there was a plan for Jordan Love to play within 2 years, and Aaron Rodgers just outplayed the hell out of that plan, right? Aaron Rodgers became an MVP when nobody thought he was going to be an MVP, including the Packers. So that ended up being plan B. You know what I mean? Aaron Rodgers was supposed to be out of the conversation 2 years prior to that happening. So there was a progression in place. Now, I tried to fit Michael Penix Jr. into that square peg this morning, right? All right, Kirk Cousins gets 2 years. They pay him $100 million. They kick him to the curb. It's Michael Penix Jr. time in 2026. I guess that's still great, but it didn't make him better this year. And that's still the plan. That's still what I keep falling back on. Why wouldn't you try to win the division right now, right? With the best available defensive player. I just struggle with that. Look, they could go and prove us wrong. And maybe this sets themselves up to be contenders for the next decade. I don't know. That seems, in a league that is a revolving door and every March, every team changes course massively, I think that's a hell of a lot to ask out of an organization. So I just think it's an old school thought. Here's the other part of this, and maybe this is a little bit too negative. Are you telling me you're not going to be able to find a Michael Penix in 2 years in the draft? Right.
Exactly.
It's not like this was the best quarterback or even the second best quarterback in this draft. There were a lot of boards that probably had Michael Penix Jr. in the 20s, let alone the top 10. Now he rose late, and we've seen quarterbacks rise into the top 10s late, you know, every year. But I don't think that this was we have to get this guy specifically move either. So there's too many reasons that I question this for me to land on a spot that says you're playing chess, not checkers. You know what I mean? And that's what I hate about it.
And maybe I'm too naive on the whole evaluation and draft process, but is that not bad. Is that just not bad from like a analysis perspective, like to sign Kirk Cousins to that contract? If you like, maybe that was too early in the process for them to have seen tape on Michael Penix or knew that they would take him that early.
No but way.
Like, if
no
consensus way. Was, if consensus was he was a late first round, maybe second round pick, and Atlanta knew they were in the top 10, why would you like be signing Kirk Cousins if you
right. thought? How did you get here? Like, how did you exactly. get here over the last 3 months? I agree it's, with you.
Like, so is that like the owner stepping in and saying, you know, like who knows what the Kirk Cousins situation was, but it just seems like really botched front office asset management to me. Right.
I'm with you. And again, I'm all for stock up on quarterbacks as much as possible, but I just don't think this was the right channel or timing or placement to do that. And this was a team I'm really rooting for. And I wanted them to get deeper and better in every other position here because I, quite frankly, I thought the Cousins ad was an electric move for them. I thought it was the right move. I don't know why you needed insurance on it 2.5 months later, but here we are. All right, let's move on here. 6 quarterbacks in the top 12 picks. Just the cycle, just the year, just the prospect pool. Or is this going to be the going rate, Dan? Because I do think that, you know, we talk about it ad nausea. This is the most important position in football. And it's kind of a weird transition to say that the Penix Jr. pick was bad, but everybody else kind of hit a slam dunk here. Is that how you take it? You know, everybody kind of got their guy. Minnesota basically had to do nothing to get J.J. McCarthy after months of hearing that was the plan. Denver has been tied to Bo Nix since Bo Nix blew up the bowl scene. I don't know. It just feels like everybody else kind of slotted in exactly where they belonged here, including the Patriots with Drake May.
Yeah, the Bo Nix one is a little puzzling to me. I know the Broncos didn't have a second round pick, so it's not like they could wait for him to fall to them in the second round or something like that. But wasn't the sense that he was not even close to going in the top 15 picks or whatever? So that one was a little bit puzzling that they would, you know, with 5 guys going in front of them, 5 quarterbacks going in front of them. Ideally, you would think some of those quote unquote fallers would be desired. If somebody was looking to get up, it seems a little bit puzzling that they wouldn't have been willing to trade back and do that Bo Nix thing a little bit later. But I'm no draft expert.
Yeah, I think with the 5 guys going as quickly as they did and the Raiders being directly after Denver, you had to pull that trigger because I'm pretty sure the Raiders were in on Bo Nix at that point in time. So
that's fair then. I guess I'm not looking too far beyond the board. Like I know the Raiders were connected with some of the other guys pretty closely and I wasn't focused on the Nix.
Can we pivot to them real quick? Cause that's been one of those conundrum teams for me. I love the Brock Bowers pick. I love the Bowers pick, but you do have Michael Mayer. Unless, does he have like a career ending injury or something? I know he was banged up late in the year. I just love them adding weapons. Does this mean Gardner Minshew's their guy? Like, you're a big fantasy dude. Is Gardner Minshew going to be the starting quarterback for this team, Dan?
I don't think
there's a day 2 or 3 quarterback that could slot in here. I just don't. You know what I mean? So yeah. I don't think I'm jumping the gun here.
I mean, there could reasonably a chance they run it back with Aiden O'Connell. And then if that is really a tire fire, then you just put Minshew in there and then they just, it's maybe they're in better position to attack this next year. Right. With a high pick next year, if things don't drastically improve, I know them as an organization is not looking at it like that, but if they're not in a position to take a quarterback high enough, right? Maybe it's okay to just kind of gather other assets and see what you can do. So,
okay, all right, let's get to Buffalo. You kind of led with that, and I know that's maybe the second biggest conversation outside of Penix Jr. this morning. I'm with you, and Brandon Bean was pretty transparent. At no point in time did he try to move up Thursday night. It wasn't in the plans. I think a bunch of things had to happen for him to even consider doing that. And this was more about getting that 3rd-round pick back that a lot of people think the NFL screwed them for with the Tremaine Edmonds compensatory draft pick that apparently did not qualify somehow formulaically. So that was the first trade back, which makes sense to some degree. your thoughts. You usually have a unique angle on this, especially with the other sports. Your thoughts on handing an absolute AFC contender, the rival, the champ, you know, the dynasty, the ability to go up and get the guy that they wanted. Because that's what Buffalo did, right? When you're trading with Kansas City, you are at least giving them power. You are empowering the best team in your conference.
Admittedly, the team is a little bit eyebrow raising, but I think if you eliminated that, this would be a widely, widely praised move. Now, maybe I am slightly biased because I came into this thinking that they were going to trade back. They didn't necessarily have the assets to get up high enough where one of those top three wide receivers were going, which is what everyone had them targeting if they were moving up. Like, they weren't moving up. To me, they weren't moving up for Brian Thomas, right? Like, they would, you're not coughing up assets for like a not one of those not top three guys, in my opinion. So to me, they have a bunch of late round picks, which can't get them up high. They're better. And also, let's say they're not, I think they entered with what, 11 draft picks. It's really not expected all 11 of those guys would make this roster. That's how good the Bills roster is up and down. So they need to sort of consolidate those late round picks. And I think they were targeting a bunch of picks on day two, which is essentially how this played out, right? They drafted back twice. Now, it's really just the Chiefs part of this, and it's only the Chiefs part of this because of the Patrick Mahomes factor, that the Bills had the Patrick Mahomes pick, traded back with the Chiefs, et cetera. We all know how that worked out. But like, everyone is like losing it over just the player that they got, Xavier Worthy, who's one of the fastest, combine guys all time. Like, the track record on guys of his size, though, is not great. I trust that the Bills scouted were not super interested in him. So in a vacuum, if that's what got them what they needed, just to put a broad stroke on this, I am not getting caught up with the Bills worrying about what is happening across the aisle, right? The Bills need to worry about the Bills roster and their cap situation and all of that good stuff. Don't worry about the Chiefs. The Chiefs are going to be the Chiefs. They are going to get good players one way or another. To me, they did not need to quote unquote block the Chiefs in this situation. Also, it's day two of the draft. Like, there's veteran receivers that are being talked about in trades. Like, I don't think for a minute Brandon Bean has zero plan in all of this, right? There were tons of contingencies. If things didn't fall the way they wanted them to fall, it's my opinion that they had contingencies, to get receivers in other ways, and maybe that's a trade back. And we saw them do it twice. The value they got in those two trades is pretty good. Am I way off on this? Am I being like, because
you're covering every base that makes logical sense, and you're trying to take fandom and attachment away from it. That's good, right? As a business move, what the Bills did for them, I think, is excellent. The point that you're probably glossing over, that I think most of the talk shows this morning are going to be all over, if I had to guess, is that Xavier Worthy may very well be Tyreek Hill 2.0. And the Chiefs know exactly how to use that, exactly how to exploit that, exactly how to win with that. You know what I mean? Now, they just won without it twice, right? I mean, they know what they're doing. But is there a world where if Buffalo doesn't make this trade, San Francisco ends up with Xavier Worthy? You know what I mean? And the Chiefs end up with Ricky Purcell or Xavier Leggett or one of these other guys. And it's not that immediate, holy crap, they just found Tyreek Hill again. Now, there's so much posturing and projecting and all that. I guess that's the narrative, though, that has a lot of people in the AFC freaking out right now, that they may have instantly just gotten 40% better, or the path got easier for them because they, of all teams, know exactly how to handle this guy specifically. So it's way out there, Dan. It's way out there. Who knows with any of these guys, right? There's seven freaking wide receivers taken. But you're right. To kill Buffalo for any other thing than did they just give the Chiefs an easier path is wrong, because what Buffalo did twice is empower them. I mean, they're one of the most powerful teams now, Friday and Saturday, and there's no way to look at that. And you're right. That could be an Ayuk situation, a Deebo Samuel situation, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think T. Higgins is in the cards, but there's certainly three or four top wide receivers still sitting there at pick 33 for them as well. So all credit to the Bills, except that one point. Did they just hand the car keys to an absolute Lamborghini for Patrick Mahomes?
And so my like, don't jump off the cliff moment with this here is like from what I can gather, the Chiefs were worried about the Ravens, right? If the Bills wanted Worthy, they would have stick and pick. They wouldn't have traded that to the Chiefs. It sounds like the Chiefs were worried about the Ravens being in on Worthy. Like the Chiefs still could have traded with Dallas, who, you know, the 29th pick. Yeah. Dallas traded that pick anyway. Do you know what I mean? So what I'm trying to say is, like, people being so convinced that we gave the Chiefs the ability to get that, like, they could have just made that deal with the Cowboys, in my opinion, right? So, like, the Bills taking the opportunity to gather those picks that they need to fill out their roster, in my opinion, you know, like those day two picks, I am not going to crush them for it. But mostly I'm trying to just be a cooler head prevailing here with the, you know, I woke up to a local and national narrative that the Bills are a joke because they made this move, right? And I'm just saying, let's let it marinate a little bit, right?
Deebo Samuel has 2 for 40 remaining, fully guaranteed this year. It sure sounds like things are switching toward that's the player on the trade block right now. If you're a team like the Bills or the Steelers, who I think are in this conversation, maybe the Colts still to some degree, who took a defensive player in the first round, probably are still one wide receiver away. Are you thinking about the 3 or 4 top wide receivers available early in the second round, or has your head shifted to a player like Deebo Samuel right now in terms of acquiring him by a trade? a couple more things. Just like last year, my God, with Lamar's contract, the AJ Brown extension kind of got thrown into the weeds. I wasn't even home for it, right? I'm up doing my thing. I get back and I see, my God, we have a $32 million per year wide receiver all of a sudden, almost $90 million guaranteed. Just a collective sigh for the CeeDee Lamb, Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase crowd, right? But that's not it. Everybody else now, right? I mean, Amon-Ra St. Brown's contract is now tier 2. And he's a number 1. So whoever's looking at Brandon Ayuk, San Francisco included, I think that St. Brown contract is now the foundation for an Ayuk extension. He may have gained himself $3 to $4 million a year just by sitting around watching things happen and unfold. The wide receiver market is going nowhere, which is fascinating because we had 7 first rounders. We're probably going to have, what, 5 or 6 second rounders? And still these guys are getting paid absolute Brinks trucks of money with their second contract extension. So the need, the supply, the demand, it's all kind of out of whack, but the money's just everywhere right now for this position. I think Brandon Ayuk may be too expensive for some of the teams we're talking about. And by the way, that may include the 49ers, who have a quarterback contract to sign in 12 months and may not want to be living with a $30 million per year Brandon Ayuk for four seasons. So I don't want to keep that out of the conversation. The money is very much a part of a lot of the decision making here. And if you want to tell me that Buffalo's decision is to take a wide receiver at 33, package that third round pick they just acquired to move up again in the second round and take a second wide receiver, I'm not sure that's terrible business, Dan. I really don't think so, because now you've got two cost-controlled wide receivers at a position that may be at $40 million a year in three seasons when these guys need extensions. So maybe reading the tea leaves of where this position is headed might just be the best way to operate business right now, because giving up draft picks for Deebo Samuel or Brandon Ayuk or T. Higgins and then having to turn around and give them the contract that is now really inflated, in my opinion, is a really tough decision to make when there's superstar players sitting on 4 years, what, $16 million, basically where we are now in the second of the draft. So tough decision making. One more thing, Buffalo traded with Carolina to allow Carolina to get into the number 32 pick. They moved up one spot. Is this all about the fifth year option? I see all these people trying to sound super smart saying that's why they're doing this, right? If this player is their number one wide receiver, the fifth year option is not going to matter, right? You're going to sign this player in three seasons if you're Carolina, because you can't screw around. You can't be the Dallas Cowboys trying to take these guys to the finish line. What does it matter to have a fifth year option on a number one wide receiver? Do you know what I mean? And obviously Buffalo wasn't interested in the wide receiver that Carolina took Leggett, because they would have taken him otherwise. They would have just freaking taken him. So that's an interesting move to me, right? A position that Buffalo needed, they traded back one pick and gave Carolina the opportunity to take a wide receiver to get the fifth year option. I know it sounds like the Panthers were doing something very smart. I think it's just wasting draft picks.
I totally agree. And I think kind of lost in this is that the Bills probably sold that they were moving that pick either way.
I completely agree. I think Brandon Bean fleeced them.
Yeah, and the Panthers had to read that as somebody else was trying to get up for Leggett, right? And the fit is a little bit weird. Like, again, I'm no draft guru, talent analysis guru. A lot of people are comping him to Jonathan Mingo, who, like, wholeheartedly did not work out in that offense last year, right? So, like, did they just double up on that guy and trade up to do it? Just for the potential of that fifth year option. But I, to your point, I think the fifth year option is really not the focal point of this. And I think the Bills got them in this one, if you will, or we're just always going to move out, whether it was the Panthers or a different team. Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Anything else kind of stand out to you positionally speaking? I mean, it was just an absolute, quarterback, tackle, wide receiver farm, right? I mean, a couple of nice DEs. I know everybody loves the cornerback that Detroit ended up getting. I know everybody loves what the Eagles were able to do. They basically let the best cornerback, best defensive back in the entire draft fall to them, the 22. Just another freaking win for Howie Roseman, my goodness. Anything else kind of standing out to you, Dan?
Not super, nothing super interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, not to keep falling back on this, but really, what is your read on the Niners? Like, let's update ourselves on what we think is going to happen with the Niners with the Ricky Pearsall pick. And I kind of say that from the perspective that some analysis is suggesting that Pearsall is more like Brandon Ayuk. And I know the recent narrative, like you had hinted towards earlier, is that Deebo may be the guy they try to move on from now, et cetera, et cetera. But like, from a talent perspective, People make it sound like Ayuk and Pearsall are pretty similar, to where maybe he's like the Ayuk replacement. Like, that's, or are we thinking they just make a run at it and Pearsall slots in, as a third receiver, straight up third receiver, tons of three wide out sets, and this is just a really, really dynamic offense for 1 year as they clutch their pearls with Brandon Ayuk, if you will. Yeah, like, what's your read on what they did there and how that affects what might happen with that wide receiver room? You know, from what I know, we just touched on this a little bit with the Bills, but
I'm going to stick to my guns and I'm going to do something I never do, which is I'm going to give you a literal take. I believe what's going to happen tonight is that the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to package 51, 98, and a conditional third round pick in 2025 to acquire Brandon Ayuk tonight. I think that's the team. I think that's the right package, right? A second, a third, and then a conditional third that can be a second next year. And then they're going to have to turn around and pay, you know, something they really never do, pay wide receivers. They're going to have to pay 28 to 29 million per year for Brandon Ayuk over the next three seasons, basically fully guaranteed. So to me, that's the team. You want to tell me the Colts end up being the team with basically the exact same draft picks? I get it. It seems like what Buffalo has done put them in a position to draft a wide receiver. So I think they're out of that conversation. I don't really know what where the Debo stuff coming from. You know, there's all the major network names are saying this, that the 49ers have told them that they're at least looking to shop him. And look, he's had his injury history stuff in the past. So maybe they're just trying to see what's out there, but I agree with you. It seems like that rookie Pearsall is the replacement from Brandon Ayuk, and that it makes no sense for San Francisco to lock in a contract extension like we're talking about here, knowing what has to come, knowing that they've already handed out the Bosa contract, et cetera, and that the Brock Purdy contract is sitting right around the corner. The 49ers are a fascinating team, and they've kind of hit lightning in a bottle more than a couple times over the past few years. What is the team? I'm just going to give you the team. Are we positive that the Bears aren't great?
The Roma Dunze pick.
With Keenan, with DJ Moore, with Cole Kmet, with DeAndre Swift. It's a lot of new, and generally new doesn't win in year one, Dan. But man, you got to at least love the writing on the wall here, right?
Yeah, I will fall back on this because we've talked about in the past. The one thing that still doesn't sit right with me is the whole GM coaching, continuity there. We all thought they should have just moved on and started fresh there. But beyond that, I mean, I really like what they're putting together. Like Caleb Williams seems like the kind of prospect that could have succeeded in a really bad situation to begin with, but they are making sure that that is not the case there. They're going to give him every opportunity to succeed there. And even with life beyond Keenan Allen, you know, possibly next year or whenever that is, they're setting themselves up for the future really nicely. And I thought the same thing when that pick fell into their hands, if you will, the way that worked out, I was like, wow, this could be a juggernaut if things fall correctly.
Keenan Allen probably a rental player now.
Yeah, that's what
Roma Dunze pick. And Chicago has picked 75 and 122 left. That's it for the entire draft. I sure hope both those picks are offensive linemen for Caleb Williams' sake, because certainly they have not done enough there. I know they've spent a couple of years really trying to address it. You can never have enough now. You got the guy, you got the quarterback, you have weapons galore. I think the defense at least rounded a corner over the past few months. They better spend every single possible draft capital for the next foreseeable future to make sure that this offensive line is stable and deep. And I believe they will do that. So just wanted to get that in there. It seems like that's a team we're going to gloss over because the Caleb Williams pick has been in for months. Them taking Roma Dunze and not taking a defensive end or something else, right, is a direct, we're just going to have so much talent that the coaches can't F this up move to me. You know what I mean? It's just going to be, we're going to have so many opportunities for Caleb Williams to shine that there's no way that he's not going to come out of the gate flourishing. And I kind of agree with that. And by the way, to some degree, this is why CJ Stroud was successful. Houston kind of put, not to this degree, but put a whole bunch, an arsenal of talented players around them that all got better because CJ Stroud could handle that kind of processing. And I believe that there's a chance that Chicago looks like Houston last year. And that would be a pretty damn good thing for Bears fans because it's been a minute for sure. All right. We'll get to some of the stuff. Every single contract projection for all of these draft picks from 1 to 257 is on the draft tracker. I will start to do some analysis on some of this, but I didn't plan to wake up this morning and have a podcast, Dan, and then the Penix Jr. stuff just threw me into a tizzy. I sometimes just have to talk it out for cathartic purposes. I was kind of hoping we'd get to a landing spot with it. I'm not sure we did. It's one of those things where we have to wait for 2 years to see where it all ends up. And the Xavier Worthy conversation is probably in the same boat, right? If he comes out and he is Tyreek Hill this year, my goodness, you know, cover your eyes, Bills Mafia. But I don't know, a little bit of an overreaction on many of these things, but I don't think it is on Penix Jr. Do you agree? I can't get to a spot where it's not an overreaction.
No, I pretty much agree there. I think it's we're not on here to give our takes on you know, the X's and O's of what happened last night, but like from a contractual perspective, there were several pressure points that we were kind of waiting for to see what might happen, you know, down the line here, you know, the domino effects of what might happen here. But I think we got a pretty good snapshot of that. So we don't have to diagnose it, but I think our analysis on the financials of like behind the Kirk Cousins / Michael Penix thing is dead on. Like you can immediately diagnose that as like a not great business decision in this moment. And the jury can still be out on how that plays out over the next 12, 24, 36 months. But in the short term, man, if you're looking around that room as a Falcons fan saying like, man, I would have been really excited to add a top end wide receiver or tight end or whatever you wanted to put in there, defensive end, top left tackle, whatever. You did not do that. You basically broke off a guy that in theory will sit for at least a year, maybe two. Doesn't feel great, but maybe I'm just speaking as a hurt Bills fan as well. So.
All right, man. I'm going to throw a question out there just to throw you on the spot. Who's the next big NFL extension? Because I think we're still about 12 to 15 short here. Seriously. Is it Dak? Is it Goff? Is it Tua? Is it Trevor Lawrence? Is it CeeDee Lamb? Justin Jefferson? We didn't even talk about the Vikings. Justin Jefferson. Jamar Chase, Jalen Waddle. I mean, I can't even stop thinking of players who might get extended here. Micah Parsons.
So this could just be totally short-sighted by me. I could see the Justin Jefferson thing happening sooner than later if he is remotely happy with like JJ McCarthy, and you can't really assume that he isn't, but he seemed motivated to get a deal done prior to this, just wanted some certainty at quarterback. I think that is probably the one, and mostly I think that because I think Dallas is like in purgatory, right? They're nowhere near on Dak or CD, if my read is correct on that, right? Don't think Jacksonville should be rushing to get Lawrence done unless like they're trying to like kind of sneak in a cheaper contract before potential breakout season, which I don't really think is happening, but just theorizing here. I would go with the Justin Jefferson thing because of like some quarterback certainty over the next couple of years there. Right? Do you have a lean?
Is it $100 million guaranteed now for sure? I mean, if AJ Brown just secured 85, 88.
Yeah.
I would think so, right?
Yeah.
So. I mean, it's going to shatter every single glass ceiling we've ever seen for a non-quarterback, in my opinion.
It's so comical for me to hear you say that Amon-Ra St. Brown's deal like immediately falls to tier two.
It's not even close.
You are correct. I'm just saying it's amazing that 3 days after a guy signs like what we think is like the new standard for a con. I mean, I know you said there was a little bit of, posturing there from like how it was
reported, it's pretty fluffy.
But regardless, the point is these wide receiver contracts are it's funny how like in some degree like in the same fashion as some of these quarterback agents are like trying to hold out to not be the first to sign because they want to leapfrog the guy that just signed previous to them. We're seeing that play out with the wide receivers here as well. So it's just funny to see that dynamic, for a guy that just signed the new high bar contract to immediately be maybe I didn't.
90 sec. We have 90 seconds left. I'm giving you one more on the spot question just to try to salvage this whole nonsense situation. Is there a team out there with a quarterback situation that could absolutely fall off a cliff in 2024? And could the Falcons trade Michael Penix Jr. after this season for a first round pick and salvage this? I'll give you a more specific example. Daniel Jones, Geno Smith. Could Michael Penix Jr. be on Seattle or the Giants next year via a first round pick to the Falcons? Could the Falcons win this whole thing in the end?
I mean, it's not totally out of the realm, right? If those team, you know, if the Raiders, if the Seahawks were involved in trying to get up to those picks. Or the Giants. Yeah, the Giants thing, we didn't even get to the Giants thing. That was super interesting to me on if they were actually trying to get up to three or if that was just kind of posturing on their point. So
it's possible. It's possible that by this time next year, Michael Penix Jr. has given Atlanta a second first round pick in 2025, but I'll go back to this. It didn't make him better in 2024. And that's what disturbs me the most. All right, man. Good stuff. We'll keep watching, keep logging this data. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Mike. See you.